Everyone, welcome to Taking Stock After the Bell, episode 35. Just James and I today. It's the so-called quiet dog days of August, but it hasn't really turned out like that. So we probably wouldn't have been here today had it not been for markets semi-blowing up. I don't want to throw in too much hyperbole because, let's be honest, it's not catastrophic by any means. But there's been lots going on, so we thought we'd get together, have a chat, throw some charts up, and generally get the lie of the land. Is that fair enough?
Yeah, and probably explain that healthy market corrections are healthy.
Yeah.
If you don't have corrections, things go up in line, and that's where bubbles are created. So pullbacks are healthy. It's opportunity. To add to positions.
And I think that's a really good point, actually, because we have had a very elongated period where markets have just gone up very quietly and in a straight line without much volatility.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, that encourages investors to take more and more risk and take more leverage and turn the dial. And we can talk about, you know, CTAs and hedge funds and black boxes and carry trades and stuff.
Yeah.
And that stuff's all very exciting. But ultimately, the longer you have without a setback or any volatility, the more, you know, what's the sort of the Minsky moment, you know, stability creates instability, and I think we're definitely seeing a blow off. So yeah, so I got first a few charts just to sort of try and paint a picture a little bit. Year to date, we've got global equities now up 6%, having been up 14%. We've got UK equities up 5.5%, nearly 6% as well. Government bonds now up 2%. Gilts now unchanged on the year, having been down. So they've made some positive progress in the last 2 months as yields have fallen. We'll talk about that in a minute. And corporate bonds showing some positive returns. In terms of equity indices in the very short term, this is since the 30th of June, and we can see, start with the blue line, the UK has actually fared the best amongst developed markets in the last month or so, down only 1.5% to last night's close, recording on the 6th of August. US markets here in yellow down about 6% from where they were 6 weeks ago. Mm. The real kind of one on jumps out on the chart there, the red line, the Japanese equity market. On this, it's down 12%. But as we recorded, actually, the market, the Nikkei, closed up 10% this morning. So that's not represented on this chart. So Japanese equities down probably, 5% now,
yeah,
I guess.
That's right.
So, you know, and as the next chart shows, volatility is back, strikes back with a vengeance. So this is the VIX index, which is the so-called Wall Street's fear gauge. Mm. So essentially, when investors become panicked, they buy protection against their portfolios, and that causes this index to rise. And we can see there that volatility reached the highest level since March 2020, when, you know, the world was ending. Yesterday, intraday, the VIX hit about 65, I think, which was basically where it got to in the COVID pandemic drawdown in March 2020. So, you know, a real kind of massive volatility spike in equity markets and a load of fear. Yesterday, the FTSE was down, 2-3%, and the US market was down 4%, wasn't it? 3% in the end.
It was down five at one stage,
and it closed back. So a real kind of yesterday was a real kind of moment in markets, wasn't it? One of those days to remember, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite extraordinary that the VIX has spiked to highest level since COVID. Bearing in mind the events we've had, I mean, we've had the Russia-Ukraine conflict.
Yep.
We've had, you know, obviously the inflationary
period in 2022.
Yeah, and it's, I guess sentiment got so placid and there was virtually no movement that actually...
Yeah, well, if we look at the VIX chart you know, if you look at the right-hand side of the chart, this is a five-year chart, so if you look at the sort of right-hand third of it, in the last 12, 18 months, that the VIX has been very, very low.
Hmm.
And as we sort of said at the beginning, you know, stability breeds instability, and hence we've had this kind of blow up in volatility. And the other interesting thing is the VIX has spiked to such a high level, yet the equity market is still only down 5 to 10%. You know, equity markets have not fallen by more than 10%.
No.
Staging a bit of a recovery today. So that in itself is unusual. One of the sources of this, and somewhat viewers and listeners may have kind of delved into this before, but the unwind of the so-called carry trade, which is where investors borrow money in Japanese yen. Japanese interest rates are obviously have been pretty much naught. So you borrow money at very low interest rates and you take that money and you go and buy assets elsewhere. Breeding grounds for that, those assets have been typically the Mexican peso, Brazilian real,
yep.
US equities, you know, anything that where you get carry, i.e. positive income differentials, interest differentials. And that's weakened the yen. So this line going up here shows a weaker yen. But in the last week or two, we've had a real strong snapback in the yen, and it's gone from what, 160, 162 down to 145.
Mm.
So you know, lots of people saying that the yen has been undervalued anyway. And a lot of people had been shorting the yen to borrow yen and buy other assets. And that's all come to a, you know, a real kind of deleveraging. Comes back to the point about leveraged investors. Mm. Taking too much risk, and that's caused significant volatility, particularly in Japanese equity markets, which were down, 10% yesterday, up 10% today. So
I think there's some evidence on, you know, as you said, some of that money has been going into sort of those big tech names with the momentum that's been in there. So you've had a double whammy for some hedge funds in terms of losing out on the yen side, but also on the asset side.
Yeah.
So, which I think is why it's, you know, the Japanese market probably cratered more than it would have done ordinarily.
Mm.
Certainly those larger stocks fell harder than the wider market. So the equal weighted S&P actually was not...
It's not been too bad at all.
No, it's not
been. We've got some charts on the tech a little bit later on, because you're right, the sort of AI kind of somewhat speculative mania in some of those stocks has all been blown off a little bit.
I think what's happened is some of the future growth and expectations has just been pulled forward too much, and that's why share prices have had a correction, and probably rightly so for the time being. But it's not to say these companies aren't good investments or great businesses, but I think everything just got a bit overheated in the short term.
Mm. Yeah, so we've got a chart here, actually. We'll stick this one up now whilst we're talking about it. But, you know, the so-called big three, the biggest three stocks in the world by a country mile, Apple, Microsoft and Nvidia. Nvidia is the blue line that you can see having risen. This is in market cap terms, so those numbers represent what they're worth in dollars. So Nvidia, briefly, for about a day, was the biggest stock in the world at over $3.3 trillion. Since then, it's fallen a good 25%, just about.
Yeah.
To 2.5 trillion, what's a few billion between friends.
I mean,
and
I
Apple and Microsoft have also seen pretty meaningful setbacks. But yeah, some of those big tech stocks, Amazon's down quite heavily as well, isn't it? So they're all down somewhere between 10% and 25%. Back to your point, there was a lot of money bidding those stocks up, and that a lot of that's been unwound in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and I think what's happened with Nvidia in particular is a lot of fund managers didn't believe in the hype of Nvidia and didn't have a position and watched it run away. I think what we did see at the beginning of the year was almost a, or not the beginning of the year, but you can see from the chart, but probably April, May time, when they had some blowout numbers again, was almost a capitulation of, actually, I've just got it wrong. I've got to buy a position because if I don't, you know, I'm going to have such meaningful underperformance, I can't afford to not own it. I think that's one of the reasons why you had that sort of sharp increase in stock price.
Yeah. But I mean, we should remember, yes, Nvidia share price is down 25% from its peak, which sounds a lot, but the stock is still up, has more than doubled year to date. It started the year under $50 and it's now still $100, $102 as we speak. So, despite a pretty meaningful correction, the stocks have still done pretty well. And
absolutely.
You know, I don't know if you get too carried away about it. And I think, come back to your point, where we said at the start, it's probably quite healthy in a way to remind people about kind of two-way risk.
Yeah, I think if we were all, you know, if things had kept going the same direction and we had another 10% 15% on these stocks, we'd probably be getting more uncomfortable than we are sitting here today with a healthy correction, because it just gets rid of some of that leverage and some of those retail positions that shouldn't really be in there, and you know, the gambling side of it does creep into these sort of stocks. They're certainly not meme stocks by any account, but they're certainly, you know, Nvidia is the one stock everyone's heard of and talks about.
Mm.
There's a lot of speculation in there.
One other aspect of the setback that we have had this week has been we've had some pretty soggy data out of the US last week, in particular on the labour market side of things, which has sort of panicked investors into thinking that the economy is heading into recession. So the chart here is initial and continuing jobless claims, i.e. how many people are filing for unemployment. The blue line is initial claims, i.e. new people signing on for unemployment benefits, and that line has been ticking up, and it was been particularly weak for the last couple of weeks. You can't quite tell on the chart. And secondly, we've also had some, we had the non-farm payroll, and I haven't got that chart here, but we had the non-farm payroll numbers on Friday, didn't we? And they were quite weak as well, and the unemployment ticked up a few more percentage or a few more decimal points. So unemployment in the US is now, what, 4.5%, having been sub 4% not so long ago. And we also had some weak manufacturing data, the ISM manufacturing PMI index. Don't need to know the details, but up is good, down is bad. That came in particularly weak. Was that Thursday or was that Friday as well?
That was Thursday. That's what started it. Yeah.
So with the ISM on Thursday, jobless claims was also Thursday, and then we had the payrolls on Friday, and a trio really of soft data. And the Fed hadn't raised rates on Wednesday.
That's really what spooked the market a bit, because the Fed would have seen this data
before making their decision.
They've made a decision to keep rates on hold, which, you know, obviously it's a dual policy mandate. You know, one of the mandates is to get inflation back to 2, and it's, I think the market is probably of the view that the Fed might be a bit more supportive towards markets and potentially the economy, but actually it's, you know, that focus on getting inflation down to 2%, I think there is a worry that maybe they won't cut as quickly as markets would like. I mean, what's your take on it?
Well, so the payroll numbers on Friday looked horrible when you looked at all of the bits of the data that comes out, the average weekly earnings, the number of hours worked. But actually, once, you know, I read some people who are smarter than me, their analysis on it. When you scratch away, part of the reason why the unemployment rate's gone up is that there have been lots of people coming into the workforce who weren't unemployed or employed, i.e. people who were in education or people who are not active in the labour market. Yeah. So the unemployment hasn't gone up because people have been fired. It's because new people have entered the market, and they've, as you enter the jobs market, you don't have a job, then you get a job. So the detail underlying the jobs report wasn't as bad as it looked on the headline level. And so I don't, you know, certainly I don't think there's need to panic, and the Fed will have known that when they made a decision on Wednesday. But of course, you put that together with yen carry trade unwinding and a few other kind of, you know, few other nasty beats of data. Oh, and the Warren Buffett sold a load of Apple stock over the weekend, or it was announced over the weekend. You know, you put, markets don't necessarily need lots of things. They just need a few small things to come together at once to totally change people's sentiments and views. And I think that's what happened kind of Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, which accelerated over the weekend, and we saw, you know, pretty big sell-off yesterday.
I think the other thing in the unemployment data is, it's, you know, from where we're sitting, it's about where the biggest companies are trading and what the profitability is doing in those companies. But, you know, actually the people that are spending money, that have the largest amounts of disposable income, that are spending the most on services and goods, actually those jobs are not going. It's the much lower sort of paid jobs, the shorter term contracts that are disappearing. So for the moment, sort of the most important part of the economy isn't changing, and we've seen that from, you know, we're halfway through earnings season, two-thirds of the way through.
Well, most of the way through now.
Yeah, and actually the numbers coming out, you know, on the whole, there's decent beats. So we're not, and that's where you see what's really going on in the economy, and there's nothing to suggest from the companies that have reported that there's anything to be concerned about. You know, some of the consumer discretionary and staples names are, you know, have been a bit softer
McDonald's, Montclair. There's a couple of companies. LVMH mentioned about softening champagne.
Yeah,
demand,
Nike.
Which is, you know, first world problems, right?
But yeah, Nike has had. But part of that is losing share to Adidas. Yeah. Some fashion trends in it.
Caterpillar announced results, and you know, if you're like me, you like big shiny machinery and kit and bulldozers and excavators. You know, Cat is one of the most important stocks in the world because it is a bellwether for what people. When you build stuff, you have diggers. Caterpillar had numbers which were great, and the stock's been weak, as you can imagine, but stock's up 2% today because the numbers were fine, and I think that's been pretty similar across earnings season, right?
Yeah, I think market's probably got a bit too sanguine on, you know, the no landing. Basically the Fed and Bank of England had engineered us out of you know, there was going to be no recession, and we've miraculously sort of got inflation down with higher rates but no impact to the economy, and you know, had forgotten about the downside risks. And I think, you know, from where we're sitting, you know, we still think, you know, markets are attractive, and actually, you know, a soft landing is more likely than a hard landing. This is just a sort of a slight change in data. It's a few points, and you know, as long-term investors, it's just noise.
It's a bit noise. Yeah.
The important, you know, the actual facts of what the companies are doing and reporting, they're all still, you know, they're still doing a good
still
job.
Respectable,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, one interesting thing is in the melee of the last kind of few days, the market has moved to price quite a lot of rate cuts by the end of the year. So I'm going to put this chart up here, Alex. I mean, it might not mean a huge amount, but yellow is what the market thought that interest rates in the States were going to do 3 months ago, and the blue line is where it sits. That's actually today, this morning. And as of this morning, the market now expects 3, if not 4, quarter point rate cuts in the States between now and the end of the year, including the strong possibility of 0.5% cut in rates in September. So the markets are pricing a much more aggressive path of rate cuts from here. And obviously in the UK, we've had a rate cut last week, which we, you know, might want to celebrate. Well, not us, because we've got fixed rate mortgages, so we're all right. But, you know, the market has moved to quite aggressively price lower rates. And if we look at 2-year government bond yields, on the next chart here, we've got UK 2-year gilt yields down at 3.75% and US down below 4%. And two-year bond yields are essentially the market's best guess of where interest rates are going to be over the next 2 years. So, you know, again, the market's moved pretty quickly from 5% yields in the States to sub 4% yields in a pretty short space of time. I just think that maybe that might be a bit too much in the short term.
I think so. It's interesting if you put the chart on of where rates, we, you know, the market expected rates to go at the end of last year. You know, I can't remember where the bottom point was.
It was pricing 6 rate cuts for this year, wasn't it, in December?
Exactly that. So it does, you know, the market does move very quickly. I think with an election coming in the US, I know they're independent, but I think that probably feels the market's probably pricing in slightly too many cuts. And it's not to say the next data point that comes in might be a slight surprise to the upside. It all changes very quickly.
Yeah, these things do have a habit of sort of normalizing a little bit in the short term, don't they?
So
quite big moves in a, you know, relatively short space of time after a pretty elongated period where not a lot's happened, really. And I think when you're investing, it's not a linear journey, is it? It's bumps in the road, it's long periods of time where not a lot happens, and then, you know, the old kind of classic days where weeks happen or weeks where months happen. So
I think for people listening, it might be useful to, you know, if we're talking about rate cuts coming in the US, you know, what's your view on sort of what equities potentially do? You know, it's obviously sector specific, but I think probably some of the people listening might be thinking, you know, if there are 2 or 3 rate cuts, then what does that mean for the portfolios?
Well, it's a good point, Husey, and that's a very neat segue into the next set of charts. And what we were going to talk about today was the potential return of small caps, because we've got a chart here of the US equity market, the broad equity market in blue, versus the yellow line, which is US small caps. And in July, in the early part of July, before this all real kicked off, there was a really big rotation in the US market out of the large cap tech names in particular into US small caps, as the a little red circle around the chart to kind of highlight the point. So we were going to sort of talk a little bit about small caps and why that might be attractive, and that, you know, small caps are a beneficiary of lower interest rates in general, broadly speaking. But in the last week or two, that's all reversed, and the small caps have fallen by more than large caps have. So we're pretty much back to where they were a month or two ago. But it, you know, pretty massive move in the kind of U.S. small cap indices, of Russell in particular. Our friends at J.P. Morgan have given us a series of charts that we are going to borrow and show. This one here shows the performance of small caps relative to large caps. So line going down means that small caps doing worse than large caps over a three-year view. And really, you know, small caps have done horrible compared to large caps over the last 5-10 years. Yeah. You know, like really bad. And if you were a sort of, you know, of a mind to be contrarian and think that interest rates were going to come down, then maybe small caps would be, you know, a pretty good place to be. We've also got a chart here on valuation, and small cap valuations, again, this is relative to large cap, so line going down means small cap are cheaper. You know, most of the time small caps are more expensive than large caps because typically they grow more.
Yeah.
But in the last few years, you know, with the advent, I guess, of kind of, well, part of the story definitely is the advent of big tech, the Amazons and the Apples and the Microsofts. Small caps are now significantly cheaper, 40 to 50% cheaper than large caps on average, as the chart shows. That said, if you look over the last 10 years, and this kind of chart blew my mind, you know, large cap in particular, large cap growth, which the red line here, the Russell 1000, has grown earnings significantly faster than the blue line, which is small caps in the States, and developed markets, the rest of the world here in purple, which has seen pretty anemic earnings growth.
Yeah.
So, you know, large caps have been the place where you've had most of that profits growth. And like night follows day, when a company's profits go up over time, its share price generally follows it. And that's true for markets and over a kind of medium to long term view. So
it's probably worth picking that apart slightly. On the one hand, you know, why do small caps do better when rates get cut? And the answer to that is small companies don't have the ability to borrow debt for as long term and fix the rates, so they tend to pay more for their borrowings, and it tends to be shorter term and you know, quite a lot more expensive than what the base rate is, so as you know, they're more impacted by rate cuts. And then on the other hand, I was reading something the other day around why small caps might not have performed as well, and part of the reason might be that, particularly in the US, small companies are not choosing to list as quickly, so you're not getting
new entrants coming through.
Turn the clock back maybe 15, you know, if you turn the clock back 20 years, you know, Amazon was a small cap stock.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas you look at Uber, you know, Uber was never a small cap. It was funded.
Well, even Facebook, which came in 2012, you know, that came straight as a large cap company.
Yeah.
And venture capital.
Venture just funded it through until it's of a significant size that, I mean,
didn't
Facebook
need to go through the small companies index.
Exactly. So that might be one reason, but, you know, why?
And we got, we got one more chart here. You know, large cap stocks have also, we've got two charts here on kind of quality metrics. And again, on the left-hand chart, we've got free cash flow margin. Large caps generally have a much higher free cash flow margin, which means that the amount of cash they generate relative to their sales is higher than small caps. And on the right-hand side, which kind of blew my mind, 45% of small caps have negative earnings, i.e. negative profits, versus about 5% for large caps. So
Is that Russell 2000 data,
I think, from courtesy of J.P. Morgan. So, you know, when you buy the small cap index, you're buying a lot of companies that don't make any money. A lot of those would be biotech startups, I guess. And then particularly more recently, it'll be companies impacted by higher interest rates and higher borrowing costs, slightly slower economy. But with large caps, you are getting much higher quality, much better profitable businesses and have generated much better earnings growth, but the valuation sits on the side of small cap. Yeah. So, you know, certainly the rotation that we saw early in July that everyone got excited about was very much a case of a bit of mean reversion and lower interest rates, faster growing economy, rotation out of big tech in particular into small cap.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing is, we pointed on a few slides ago, but the valuation starting point, you know, these companies are so cheap that it doesn't take much for them to rebound in terms of value. And the difference between, you know, the margin, having a good margin or a bad margin might be on interest on the cost of debt.
Cost of debt, yeah, and a little bit of top line growth because the economy's been slightly better, exactly. So your sales line is a bit higher.
I mean, the other thing on small cap is this is the reason we tend to favour active managers in this space, because within the Russell 2000 there's a lot of bad companies that you don't want to own. So you need a specialist manager that can do the work on the businesses and own the better quality names in there that tend to be the profitable ones or the ones with the ability to have the funding to grow to the type of businesses that we want to own.
Totally agree. And a few other sort of...
Your area of expertise as a farmer.
My area of expertise, commodities. Yeah, so just a few other sort of charts to finish off, really. I mean, the sort of aspect of the kind of weakening economy argument is that commodity prices have been pretty weak. Here's a chart of a London-listed commodities ETF, which follows the broad, I think it's the Bloomberg Commodity Index, which is, energy, oil, natural gas, in metals, copper and iron ore, but also agricultural commodities, wheat and soya, etc., corn. And... it's gone down quite a lot. And generally speaking, commodities do well when the economy is doing well, because again, not dissimilar to Caterpillar, you buy stuff and you build stuff when the economy is doing well. But commodities have been pretty weak, so it kind of adds a little bit of credence to the idea that the economy is slowing globally. We've not touched on China, and I think podcast for another day, but the news there is definitely not positive, is it?
No, it's definitely slowing. And they've historically been a massive buyer of commodities, so that's going to have
particularly
an impact.
Copper and iron ore.
Yeah, I mean the IRA in the US will have had an impact on commodity buying. You probably see part of the year that increase in pricing might have been slightly linked to that.
And I think structurally, energy transition, growing economy, still an element of increasing global population and urbanisation.
Sure.
We're going to need more commodities ultimately. But we, if you look over the long term, 30 to 50 years, we've just got better at producing them cheaper, which is why they've not gone up in price in anywhere near the same degree as prices have, i.e. in real terms, they've fallen in value.
And you had a massive sort of support buyer in the form of China as well for years, didn't you, which kept commodity prices, particularly around iron ore, very high.
And whether electric vehicles, new... energy transition, renewable energy for the grid. You need a lot of copper, don't you, to get wind turbines power back to the grid. You need all sorts. So whether
is it 2 miles of copper is required in each electric car?
Yeah. Well, viewers and listeners can go back and listen to the episode with Jamie that we did on properties, because he had all the data and all the charts in there. So no, I mean it's been a really interesting kind of week in markets. Have you sort of had many kind of clients been on somewhat concerned? I mean, I did sort of laugh. I don't know why. I never do. I watched the 10 o'clock news last night because I was watching the Olympics and it came on. And it was about the third news item, global stock market meltdown. And I thought, all right, yeah, what's going to happen here? And they showed a chart of global equity index from year to date. And the fall was like, it was tiny. Yeah. And this isn't meltdown by any stretch. Equity markets are down less than 10%, and this is equity markets normally fall at least 10% once a year.
Yeah, 100%.
So this is entirely normal. But are any sort of concerned clients on as yet, worried about anything?
Not too many. No, less than a handful. And I think those that have been concerned, it might be where there's a financial event coming up.
Yeah.
Which
some school fees to pay.
Yeah. Some extra VAT. Yeah. And potentially that, or newer clients that aren't used to this sort of volatility. And it's just a case of holding their hand through this and explaining, as you just said, that it's normal for equity markets to fall 10% in a year. And once clients have seen the fall and seen the recovery that inevitably comes, the next one is they're more relaxed about.
Yeah.
So the longer term clients, I wouldn't expect any phone calls. But no, I think mostly clients, they know they're invested for the long term, and this is sort of short term noise. Particularly over the returns we've had for the last few years have been very positive.
Well, progress is non-linear, as I always sort of say to clients. Clients have been with us for 5-10 years, have seen returns that we would have expected them to have achieved, depending on their risk profile is, etc. But they've had to go through some pretty rough patches in the 100%. Last 5 years, years.
So the problem with markets is they grind higher very slowly.
Yeah.
And fall very sharply
down,
and quickly,
up
but
the escalator down the lift, isn't it?
Yeah, but the upward grinding slowly, you know, over time far outweighs the quick corrections.
Yeah, so we've been, you know, doing a few bits of portfolios, haven't we? There's sort of does present some opportunities.
Yeah.
I mean, the Nikkei was down 10% yesterday and up 10% this morning. I mean, I did sort of say to Jack yesterday, you know, maybe if the Japanese market stays down, then that we can top up some of it. But that sort of seems to have sorted itself out this morning. So, all right, okay, we'll do that then.
I think, you know, I think for sort of savvier investors or for longer term investors with savings, and you know, I've had a couple of clients where I know cash is sitting on the side waiting for a better entry point. You know, not with me, but with them. You know, I've dropped them a line and said this could well be a good opportunity to start adding. You know, and that's, you know, our view is you know, over the next 6 to 12 months, equities outperform other asset classes. So I think, you know, it seems sensible.
Well, the odds are stacked in your favour, and that sort of analogy I try to use more often is equity investing is a bit like going to a casino. However, the odds are in your favour. So you go to the roulette table and you've got a, basically in any one day, you've got a 54% chance of winning. So the longer you stay there and the more you roll, as long as you don't blow yourself up and have like a massive run of negatives, which seems unlikely on a probability basis, you will win and you will accumulate. So the longer you stay and the more you kind of play the game, the better your outcomes are going to be over the time. And you just need to make sure that during these periods of there was a BBC News breaking news. I don't know if you get the BBC News alerts on your phone, do you? No. But stock market turmoil was one of those yesterday, and I did sort of think at that point, I thought, might have gone a bit too far here.
But remember, at the casino, you get free sandwiches.
That's right, because I want you to carry on going, right?
Get free dividends.
You do get your dividends. You do get
pay to wait, John.
Pay to wait. Whilst you were doing it, so. Yeah, and hopefully markets will settle down, not least because I'm going on holiday tomorrow and I could do without it. And if not, it doesn't really matter because it will sort itself out and
it will do.
Progress will continue. So
the other side is, on the other side of the portfolio, which wasn't the case 5 years ago, is bonds are producing a very good return in the meantime and have gone up in value, as we've from the charts in front of us.
So bond yields falling, prices go up. So they have actually, for the first time in a good few years. No, you're absolutely right.
Positive correlation.
Positive correlation. Negative correlation. Negative correlation. So bond prices have gone up in the last month or two. So if you've had bonds in your portfolio, they have helped protect against, you know, the equity market setbacks. And as long as, you know, most clients are pretty well diversified and you're not all in on kind of the AI theme, then you've probably been okay. But no, it's been okay. It's been fine. On it goes. All part of the job, isn't it?
And corrections are positive.
Corrections are positive. Blow off the froth. should we call it a day?
Yeah. That was good.
Good. Excellent. Well done. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening and watching. We'll put this up as a video so you can see with the slides. Also, obviously, as an audio. Any questions, as always, get in touch. James.Hughes@quarterachievit.com and I'm Jonathan.Raymond@quarterachievit.com. With that, we wish you a good summer and see you next time.